The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. It is Tuesday, about 1:30 Eastern. Dominique Foxworth joins me as always. We're not going to talk about Monday Night Football, obviously, or what happened in football this weekend before last night. We're just going to talk about last night. Dominique, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, it's a uncomfortable situation, obviously, and I don't know what to say to people because, like, lots of people were checking on me, and it's like nothing happened to me, but I get it. Like, last night was difficult for a lot of people. Obviously, the most difficult for teammates and family of Hamlin, and I was talking about this a lot today, and one of the things that I was reminded of is how much time you spend with your teammates and how close you get. And while I only have a couple of, like, friends that I maintained from my days of playing, when I was playing, like, we say it's like family, it really feels that way because you spend so much time with them, and, like, you go out with them, you go to work, you're at work with them. When things go wrong on the field, like, you suffer with them. When things go well, you celebrate with them. And it really, at those moments that, like, and I think the intense pressure that you're under, like, it brings you so much closer to someone that you feel like they are lifelong friends, even if you just met them a couple months ago. So, and I think we saw that on display last night Monday night, from how players were reacting and responding to the concern that they had for their teammate.
I think it was those reactions that kind of just put everyone, well, it just was the emotional catalyst, I think, for all of this in some ways, right? Because the hit that Damar Hamlin took to the chest, and just the latest, what we know, just checking with the Bills, is, you know, they said he suffered cardiac arrest. His heartbeat was restored on the field. He got CPR. He was transferred to a medical center, and he's in critical condition as of this recording. Watching the hit, I don't think anyone thought much, frankly. And then for me, it was when they cut to Josh Allen first. Mm-hmm. I've just never seen a player look like that. And then Diggs crying, and then Tre'Davious White with his hands behind his head. So many thoughts went through my head, one of which was, oh my God, like, this, to your point, like, wow, you think about these players and their relationships, but that scene drove it home for me more than anything I've ever witnessed or anything, any conversation I've ever had. And then it also, I think, really immediately alerted us to the severity of what was happening. Dominique, like, they were talking about, you know, in the immediate aftermath, as everybody was trying to figure out what was going on, there was also a lot of confusion about whether the game would be played. I want to talk to you about that in a second. But I, watching that, I think my first thought was, like, those reactions, I don't know how they could play then. And frankly, in the immediate future, I mean, what were your thoughts, like, seeing their faces and thinking about, wow, these guys are going to they're going to play at some point?
When we came back from commercial and we saw Josh Allen with his hands over his nose and mouth, it's kind of like he had seen a ghost. He just was seemed like, I feel like saying shocked or stunned doesn't, like, do the look justice. And I imagine everybody who's listening to this has probably already seen it. And Stephon Diggs had tears streaming down his face. My mind went to the worst possible place immediately. Because, and you've been around football long enough, and we've seen bad things happen before, and no one responds like that. You know, it's like, even if there are, if somebody is crying, it's a player, it's the player who is injured because he won't be able to come back, and it's like his ACL is torn and his season is lost. That's the one person crying. Everyone else is patting him on the back, like, come on, you can do it, and, like, pray it. Even if I've been a part of games where players have been paralyzed, even in those situations, we it's something that's within the realm of possibility when you show up there, so you're not like completely knocked off balance by it. So you pray, you take a knee, you pray, you put your head down, and you gather around your teammates, stuff like that. But those guys were like roaming around the field, like holding each other, and like just they didn't quite know what to do, and the looks on their faces. So that's where my head went initially. It was like the worst possible thing could happen, and then it's the wait for them to cancel the game. Because I was on the phone with some coworkers and colleagues back and forth, and I was like, this is going to be canceled. And their pushback was like, oh, no, this is football. And they tried to tell me stories of how stories that I told them about practice where somebody get hurt or something else happens and we just keep it going. And I'm like, no, this is different. This feels different. And at no point did I think they were going to actually play. I remember watching the coaches talk and thinking, the hell the coach is talking about? Like, yeah. This decision needed to come from on high. Like, this is something. And I didn't have any information about what had happened. Like I mentioned, my mind went to the worst possible place. And, yeah, so it came down eventually. I don't know. I'm not one who's I think we all had emotional reactions and people went to the internet to voice their disgust and have some sort of outlet. You grieve how you grieve. You deal with surprise how you deal with. If that makes you feel better, it's fine. But generally, like, they didn't cancel it fast enough. Like, I'm not one of those guys. Like,
yeah, there's a lot.
The speed at which you cancel. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. There's kind of a lack of clarity about exactly what was going on, too. You know, in the moment, Joe Buck was talking about how the players were told they had 5 minutes to warm up and get back on the field. And this was people were very mad about this correctly, I think. Mm-hmm. And then Troy Vincent, who's like the head of football operations, I think his title is, for the NFL, said in a call last night, oh, that never happened. Joe Buck said today that someone in the NFL told John Perry that was how it happened. I understand why. First of all, it's the NFL. There should never be suspicion is always the right immediate reaction, skepticism, you know, over the concern for players and whatnot. But like, I also felt like, to your point, I was on the internet last night just refreshing, just looking for news, refreshing every little inkling that came out. Oh, you know, they got CPR. They're waiting for the mom to get in the ambulance. I was just looking for those gloms. But it also felt like, to your point, you know, people wanted to be mad at someone and something, and I understand that. And I think that that's sort of where that anger, I mean, shoot, you know, like the most discussed topic outside of the actual injury was a very poorly worded Skip Bayless tweet. I think that's just a reflection of, you know, the desire to do something, like, oh God, like, and then the desire, by the way, was also went into good things, like people found the charity he had set up for kids and millions of dollars are going into that. People just want to do something rather than just simply stare at the thing, because the thing is so scary. Yeah. And I think that's kind of, everyone's almost sort of still in that process right now of just like, well, what do we do? What do we say? What do we think? Who can we be mad at? What can we help? How can we do anything? When the reality is there's not much that can be done. It's when things like this happen, you sit and wait. You said today, I didn't know that you were on the field for the Kevin Everett game. I guess I just wanted to ask you, that experience, was that different in your mind?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's as close as anyone can be to this, but still incredibly different. Like, it's not even... it's not in the same field to me. And my guess is the 5 minute thing is because I imagine we had the same situation.
Yeah.
Is that's the protocol. I doubt that anyone was like, hey, y'all got 5 minutes to play. My assumption is like, all right,
somebody when there's told a long him, stoppage. This is the typical...
Yeah, somebody's like, this is the protocol. When there's a long stoppage in play, like there's a weather incident, if there's an injury, it's like, all right, you got 5 minutes to warm back up and get back on the field. And my guess is that Troy Vincent or Roger Goodell did not call in and say, tell him 5 minutes,
Yeah.
And the show must go on. So that aside, I don't remember if we got 5 minutes to warm back up, probably, but he wasn't my teammate. That had something to do with it. And paralyzation while playing, or not even just paralyzation, being carted off in that way, even if for precautionary reasons, isn't commonplace.
But you've seen it.
Yeah, and I had a college teammate who had been carted off from a practice, and he ended up being fine. Adam Taliaferro was one of my friends from Penn State football camp. He ended up going to Penn State, and I went to Maryland, and he was paralyzed in the game that I was watching. And, like, we had seen videos. Like, it's something that happens enough that everyone remembers at times. Like, Shazier, it was recent. Like, we all remember times when it happens. So when it happens, you're kind of not, like, you're surprised, you're uncomfortable, but you're kind of not shocked. And you're like, all right, we go back to work. This, though, and I feel like I should offer that story because it feels like it's close to what's happening now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel close at all to me. You know, it just doesn't feel the same. What they saw or what they experienced, they were doing CPR. Like, I don't know that as many wild and crazy things as I've seen and been close to on the field. I'm sure I've told you most of the stories of these things. I've never seen someone's heart stop and them, like, frantically perform CPR on someone. That, to me, that's hard to. And not only frantically perform CPR, but he didn't stand up and walk off the field afterwards. He didn't give us the obligatory thumbs up. He was, I hesitate to use, he was motionless, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And that's nothing like anything I've experienced.
Do you think it's, I don't know how to phrase this. The NFL hasn't said anything about the game.
Right.
This is, you know. My first thought was, I wasn't sure if they were going to cancel it. Then I think something clicked and I thought, this is actually going to happen, which should happen. And then, again, I just keep going back to watching those players and thinking, like, I've never seen players look like this. They certainly can't play in the moment. I don't know how you watch something like that. I know there's, like, a part of the brain that is, that they're very, very good at compartmentalizing. It's, like, a very underrated aspect psychologically of being, of doing this sport at a high level. But, like, do you think that it's too much to ask them to play this week? Like, how do you think that discussion should happen? Like, when you get back on the field, what's the, I don't know the right way to go about it.
Yeah,
what do you think is the right way?
The closest thing I can think of that I experienced like this was my second year in the league. We had a game on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, and we lost, so we didn't get in the playoffs. We needed to win that game, get in the playoffs. We lost. Darren Williams, my teammate, rookie, the same year I was a rookie, both cornerbacks. He was shot and killed that night after we lost. And I got a call at, like, 4 a.m. or something and woke me up that he had been shot. I went to the hospital and sat around with my teammates who had white T-shirts drenched in blood. His mom had gotten there from Texas, and he was already dead, and we didn't know what to do. We sat around, and then the subsequent days, we were out of the playoffs, so, like, we could, like, take our time and, like, mourn. Yeah. And again, I feel bad bringing up Darren because obviously DeMar Hamlin is not dead, but the shock from that is, I could not imagine, and I'm sure we would have if we needed to, I could not have imagined playing a playoff game the next week. I couldn't imagine, I just can't. In that moment, and we probably would have cooked up some bullshit. about this is what he would have wanted us to do, or let's dedicate it to him. We would have done some stupid shit like that and played through because that's what we do. So I know that the players are capable, but I don't think it's responsible or fair to ask them to go play after what they, I mean, yeah, this soon after what they experienced. And while he's, we don't have a defense, like he's in limbo.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to prepare a game plan?
We've seen the NFL move heaven and earth during the pandemic, notably, to try to squeeze in these games. This feels cataclysmic. Like, this is so unprecedented and so different. And I guess that my sense is, obviously, it's very easy for us to say, well, the player should take the way, but we know that that's not really how this goes, you know, and that.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Do you think anybody should play? That's not a fair question.
No, I was wondering about that because I...
Yeah, like...
Because the thing about... Okay, so like the players are on the field. They're watching him. Not only do they know him, not only are they wondering the same thing as the rest of us, I think that has to activate parts of your brain that you have to quiet to play the sport, right? This acceptance of risk, which I want to talk to you about. But that's not just for guys on the field.
Yeah.
Every single NFL player was watching, has seen that now by this point. And I don't know what it's like to watch something like that and be like, all right, now I'm going to shut that part of my brain off again this weekend. Right now, it's crazy to me. I wish that everyone could at least have like a week or something. I don't know what the right answer is. It doesn't feel like something that's going to happen.
I don't know. I feel pretty certain that the players would be capable of playing.
Yeah.
This weekend. Outside of the Bills. The Bills, maybe not. And the Bengals, maybe not. They're on the field. It's possible. I think the other teams would be capable of playing. I guess it's also like, while he's in limbo, it just feels, I don't know. This is uncharted territory, and like I don't know what it's fair to discuss. I don't know what it's fair to think, but it also, like, for the NFL to proceed at all, like, does not feel like it definitely should happen. And I'm not saying that it definitely shouldn't happen, but to put on any games this weekend feels like, it just feels, I don't know the right word, uncomfortable and like wrong to some degree.
Let's take a quick break. I want to talk about that that sense of discomfort. With Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, every bet earns with Caesars Rewards. That means whether you win or lose, you're always earning towards perks like free stays at iconic Caesars properties, game tickets, dining, and more. And if you haven't started yet, here's a reminder. Your first bet is on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet.
Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. No when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK, 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So you brought up player safety this morning on television, player health, labor, the ongoing, ever, you know, persistent conflict between the owners and the players on issues of health, and then how we as football viewers think or really don't think about it. I guess I want to ask you what sort of where your mind goes to in bringing that up and how it's received generally when it comes off of an incident like this.
I mean, nobody likes it, but and like I know that you, yeah, I'm talking to the right person. Nobody likes to hear some of the things that you feel obligation to address. And I feel that obligation for many things, important things. I think that I'm not being, to be fair to everyone in this industry, our job is, I don't want to insult any of us, including myself, but it feels oftentimes like our job is kind of frivolous and inconsequential until it's not. And then it feels like it's so important. So particularly when we had like the aftermath of George Floyd, it was like there are people who would never be willing to listen to any conversations about injustice. Football fans, sports fans who aren't seeking out literature on this, who aren't like interested in it, in this moment they're listening and in this moment they're interested. And like that fills me with some sort of energy that's like, this is an opportunity. Like all the other that we talk about, like, is Aaron Rodgers back? Is Tom Brady gonna do it again? Is Patrick Mahomes the greatest of all time? Who's gonna win the MVP? None of that matters. I know it when I'm talking about it, even when it feels important. Like, how's it gonna impact his legacy? So we're talking about a player that is, most of the time, is doing all right. And we talk about this kid's the biggest game of his life. And then something like this happens and we're all reminded none of it matters. So I guess that was that. I don't want to waste those opportunities, I guess, is the way that I put it. And so lots of people have been supportive of me. And I guess I should explain to people who haven't been watching ESPN all day. What I've been doing on a lot of the shows is like I pivot the conversation. Like I want to like send the best wishes and have my thoughts with Damar Hamlin's family and with him and the team. And that stuff is like legitimate. But from there, I pivot to all the other players who are suffering as a result of being involved in this game. And this game is different from any of the other major sports, unless you consider like combat sports, like MMA, a major sport. But this game is very different, and the CTE and dementia and the long-term impacts of playing this game is real. We have not solved that. We might never solve that. So when something happens like what happened with Hamlin, is it was so sudden that it impacts us. But I mentioned this is that a guy who was my age that I played with, we weren't on the same team, but we played the same position in the league at the same time. His wife called my wife about sometime during the summer, a few months ago. because he had barricaded himself in the house with a gun and was like talking about conspiracies and talking wild and saying nobody can come in. But like, it was scary. And so me and my wife, like, we called all the people we could call. We're up all night trying to help these people out. He never had a moment like this. He didn't have a moment like we saw for Tua. But I think it's fair to assume that part of what's happening to him is a result of having played this game. And I think I can name people that we know who've died and been able to investigate their brains, from Dave Duerson to Mike Webster to John Mackey to Junior Seau, like people who we know that this game impacted them, their life and their family's life afterwards. So, yes, DeMar Hamlin is going to be dramatic, and his family are going to have to deal with the aftermath of this for the rest of his life. There are a lot of players like that who are doing that now, and players who are in the league now that you like or you don't even know that will be dealing with this going forward. So I just wanted to use this time, because after a normal week of football, nobody wants to hear that. Like, Mike Greenberg's not going to give me my 5 minutes to go on about labor relation issues on Get Up on a Tuesday after a big Monday night game. And just remind people of that. And the thing that I think really upset people about what I said, or because most of that stuff people can get behind. But then I started talking about the salary cap, which I know no one wants to hear me talking about money, but that's how we measure risk in this country. And you are a former business journalist. You understand that risk and reward should be like level. They should be like, the amount of risk you're taking should be commensurate with the amount of reward that's on the other side. It's not true for players, because there is no cap, as we were reminded. There is absolutely no cap on the risk that you are taking. And there's definitely a cap on the reward. Salary cap.
What you're trying to do is get people to... to acknowledge that risk, that it's omnipresent, that never goes away, that the worst possible, not actually the worst possible, you know, but one of the worst things that could happen because of that risk is something we just witnessed. And that makes people in this industry, around this industry, people who watch it, very uncomfortable, because people want to enjoy football without acknowledging that, right? You want to write off an incident, whether it's Tua's concussions or something so horrible like we saw last night, as being a one-off and sort of not have it interrupt our enjoyment of the game. But I think it's important to note, you're not saying football shouldn't exist. You're saying this risk exists. And then it has to inflect how we talk about and think about not just the game, players, lives, injuries, rules. We bitch about rules constantly without acknowledging what they're intended to do. And then, as you just said, labor, quality of life, the things we don't talk about, barely talk about, you know, when they come up. I think people want those things to like exist in separate boxes, and they want something like this to be a one-off, right? But what you're saying is that persistence of risk that never goes away, because this is not a normal job. It is not a normal sport. It's something that we have to like sit with it and live with it and kind of hold it in our hearts, not just today, but whenever we talk about these things. And I think that's just, it makes people uncomfortable because it's hard to live with that sort of and sit with it.
Yeah. I appreciate you summarizing it, and I appreciate you giving me time to talk about it, because I don't think that people want to hear it. And I do, however, like, I don't know. It's not going to go away. I don't want it to go away. There's an opportunity, I think. I guess this all stems from my experience as like being on executive committee during CBA negotiations and being president afterwards. Is I and people get mad at me and say, you negotiated it, deal with it. Negotiations are not a sporting event where you go into a room and with equal sides and you just try to out-scheme them. Like, people think negotiations is like the you see in a movie where somebody like plays hardball, or like, I play hardball on you, so I win this negotiations. No, negotiations, the result happens in that room, but they take place over the course of a long time. It's about building and creating leverage. And so it was difficult during that time, in part because the public was not on our side. And we were in negotiations with multi-billionaires who were like printing money, and they were saying, we're not making money. And then we would say, that is absurd. And our players would then hear, and it influenced them, they would hear from the outside world, you guys make enough money, you're greedy, hurry up, get back to work. And media members saying the same thing, and that like impacts the leverage in the negotiations. So to whatever degree I can change that, and like, our players have 5 years of health care after you retire. You have 5 years of health care. After that, you're on your own. Figure it out somewhere else. That to me is outrageous. And that's all we could negotiate given the circumstances and the leverage. So but it's going
to
get boring.
It's right for you to bring that up, because people, we see something like this, and like I said earlier, everybody wants to do something, right? What can be done? Well, you can't change the game, although there's efforts to make it safer and change rules and all of that. And you can direct your anger at the NFL for not reacting, you know, in 10 minutes instead of 45 minutes or whatever. And you can get mad about a Skip Bayless tweet. All of that is so meaningless compared to what you just said. Like, people want to be, they want to channel the emotion that they feel watching this into something. Change that.
Yeah.
Support the players when they want to be taken care of, because they all play, they all enter the game with that risk, that what we saw last night, it could happen to any of them. So I'm glad you brought this up, because that to me, that strikes me as the best possible outcome for people in terms of the reactions, is to actually sit with what happened and see something like that as something that should be changed.
DeMar Hamlin is in his second year, which means he's not yet a vested player. You have to get to 3 years and three games, I believe, to be a vested player, which means that he has not qualified for any of the benefits that come with being an NFL former NFL player. So the 5 years of health care that I enjoyed, he don't get that. The pension that I will enjoy when eventually I take it out, he don't get that. His family doesn't get that. Like, he is not, and that's
an outrage.
To me, it's mind-blowing.
That's terrible. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know we talked earlier about the players going back to games. I mean, I was just texting with Field about my podcast last week. I was like, Let's update people on what's happening. And then I guess we're going to preview these games. Going to talk about them. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all live with multiple things in our minds at the same times and hearts. And I don't think that's impossible, but it's going to be pretty uncomfortable.
And it should be.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing I wanted to focus on a lot this morning, is I'm uncomfortable as hell, and I want everyone else to be also. Like, you don't get to point the finger at everyone and say, that's their fault, that's our fault, and then feel good about yourself. Be uncomfortable, too, with me. Look at the same shit that I'm looking at.
I just wanted to close by encouraging people. Ty Dunn interviewed him last year as a writer, in Buffalo, and I was reading the story. It was about, you know, DeMar being from the Pittsburgh area, and his dad was incarcerated, so, you know, just growing up trying to help his mom, working for their business, and then wanting to stay close to home. I really encourage and be a difference maker in his community. And then I saw people shared like his player page, where he talks about how his favorite player was Darrell Revis, and I It reminded me, so I did a story about Darrell Revis like 2009 or something, or no, 2014. And it reminded me a lot of Revis's story, honestly, being, you know, with his mom, and there was just a lot of parallels. And then I saw Darrell tweeting support for him. And I guess that's kind of just, you know, when I see like the donations and all this, I just hope he sees it.